comicbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbookbook Tuesday, October 25th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. It's over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here. We've only got one half of our Tuesday meeting show here on this Tuesday edition. We'll be joined by Brad Powers, BradPowersSports.com, for our weekly Powers Picks segment. No Brian Leonard today. Brian Leonard will join us on Thursday's show. So instead, we'll have Austin Peters of The Step Back, which is formerly Hardwood Paroxysm. We'll talk with him about that sort of reshuffling over there, but we'll get some good NBA insight for him, or from him, I should say. Of course, the NBA tipping off tonight with three games, a lot more teams in action tomorrow night. We'll get some solid NBA analysis from somebody who I think, based on what I've read from him and some of the analysis he's had on this show, you know, could potentially have a future in an NBA front office if he wants it. So we'll definitely be getting some good insight there from Austin Peters on today's show. We'll go ahead and start with the man of the hour. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, buddy?
It's going well, but I think you folks in Northeast Ohio are probably a little bit excited about waking up this morning than I was, bud.
Yeah, it's some kind of special day here around, of course, Cleveland Cavaliers with their banner raising tonight, getting their championship rings, and then next door, game one of the World Series, Cleveland Indians against the Chicago Cubs. So Cleveland is the center of the sports universe tonight. And, I mean, hey, you're an Ohio guy. I'm sure you're excited about it, even though you're not around for the festivities.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. But, you know, obviously the bases and the hoops are something this time of year that you know, I'm not necessarily focused on completely. I mean, I might sneak a peek at an inning or two for the Cleveland matchup tonight, and maybe a little bit of the banner ceremony, but it's got to be business as usual. Vegas and money never sleeps, and there's still money to be had in the football side of things.
Yeah, there definitely is. Before we get into that here for this week, I do want to ask you about the NBA, and I do want to throw out to our listeners here, you know, you and I talked a little bit of NBA and college hoops during those two seasons last year, but it's not really something that you're focused on until football's done.
It's not, and I try to be I never try to pretend to be something that I'm not. I'm a football guy first and foremost. It is the sport that I follow year-round, and I get it. I mean, with so many sports, I mean, you got the NHL, you got the World Series, you got the NBA starting up, you got both football. I mean, you can get some soft markets, particularly in the non-football market, so I get it. There's money to be had there, but, you know, I got to satisfy my customer base, and 75-80% of them want football. And I also got to satisfy at least what my passion in life is in football. And I've always been under the impression, or at least had the philosophy that, you know, I'd rather be the very best at something than a little bit above average in a lot of things. So I still continue to focus on the football. And, you know, the reason being is, yeah, the football side of things, I just think there's value to be having, especially when you follow it all season long. I was just looking at my season win total best bets, and I'm probably a week away from cashing half of them already, and we're talking October. So that's why I focus on football year-round. I can have great success, particularly in the off-season markets, and I just don't dive into the NBA and the college hoops until football wraps up with the last bowl games there. So I start and jump feet first right into January, and we just go from there.
Well, even with the NBA and then college basketball in about 3 weeks' time or so going on, the biggest betting handles are still going to be on the football games. But that being said, with so much going on here over the next several weeks, where we will have, you know, anywhere from, what, 2 to 10, 2 to 15 NBA games on a nightly basis, the NHL going on, which gets a little bit of sharp action, not a ton of public action. Do you find that, you know, you start to get to a point here in the college football and the NFL seasons where you're getting back to some line value because there's just so much that needs to be lined on a nightly basis?
You know, not so much in, you know, your traditional, you know, NFL. I mean, the NFL is going to be aligned mostly, right? I mean, that's what people are betting. But, you know, some of your softer markets might be your Sun Belt and MAC conferences. And that might get a little less attention. What I found last week, I thought the totals market in college football was as soft as I've seen it since early in the season. I mean, it could be a combination of the multiple sports happening and, you know, a combination if you deep dive into box scores and you have multiple weeks where there's misleading finals as far as high scoring, low scoring, and you start matching up with that opponent. I'll use an example. We had a Louisiana Lafayette-Texas State game that you know, was priced at 66, and I understood it a little bit because you had, if you just followed the scores along with Texas State, they were 5-1 to the over. Louisiana Lafayette had a couple high scoring games, but they had a couple of high scoring games because there was multiple overtime sessions, and you combine that in with a Texas State game that had a very misleading fourth quarter as far as a bunch of scoring. And it was, you know, I released four totals plays last week for my VIP customers, and I cashed every single one of them by three touchdowns. So does that happen every week? No, but I just thought we had some very soft lines in college totals, and that might be, you know, something because of the fact that we got four or five major sports happening now.
I think another thing, too, and you and I talked about this, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but now that we're pretty much exclusively into conference play, there's a lot more familiarity, and you do get some of those misleading, lopsided types of scores during non-conference play that have probably influenced, you know, some of the odds makers' minds in terms of totals.
Yeah, I mean, prior to last week where I think the over went 30-25-2, I think we had a couple weeks there where the under was hitting 60, just blindly the under was hitting 65%. And, you know, I'll tell you one trend that continues to cash. I mean, it's been three or four straight weeks now where, I mean, the underdog just blindly has been 10 to 15 to 20 games above favorites. I mean, even last week, underdog betting 34-22-1. You get into conference play, they're familiar with one another. You can't be laying heavy point spreads, especially in today's day and age of college football. The underdogs have been having a tremendous season. Now, I haven't done always a great job of picking those out, but they continue to cash week in and week out. Not surprised too much because, you know, last year was a tremendous year for the favorite. In fact, since they've been following at least the last 10, 15 years, you know, blindly favorites hit 52% last year. That does just not happen. I mean, that's usually in the 47, 48% range. And an abnormal year, you would expect more value on the dogs, and that's been the case so far this season.
I want to elaborate a little bit more about that with underdogs doing so well here this season. I mean, is it a situation where, you know, you have some teams that are, I guess, looking ahead to the future, like in Ohio State last week, for example? I mean, Ohio State was in an awful spot. I don't think people realize how bad that spot was for the Buckeyes, and people just take for granted how good that team is. Second straight road night game against a team coming off of a bye. Does it excuse them from losing as a three-touchdown favorite? No, it really doesn't. But the fact that they struggled isn't all that surprising. And it sort of feels like, you know, we kind of run into that type of thing here around weeks 8, weeks 9, weeks 10, where those really good teams have some of those spots where they just don't play very well.
No question. But I'll also say this. I mean, on the whole, I mean, there's five or six really good teams in college football this year, I would say. And even like in Ohio State's not immune to that performance. Look at Louisville, I mean, struggling with Duke. I mean, really, to be honest with you, I mean, Michigan's looked great, but again, I think a lot of it's been softer schedule. And no disrespect, they've taken care of business. But really, outside of Alabama, I mean, where are the dominant teams in college football? I'll tell you what, I see a lot of mediocrity. When I look at my power ratings, and I have teams like Florida State. I still have Ole Miss in my top 20 who's got four losses. Just from a Vegas ratings aspect, I mean, I got USC in my top 20, an Oklahoma team who I think is very mediocre. I mean, there is a lot of mediocrity in college football. I mean, I have Auburn right now power rated as far as Vegas ratings as the number 7 team in the country. LSU's 8. I mean, we're talking teams with multiple losses. I mean, it's not November here. We are talking – you know, late October, and I got multiple teams power rated high just because there's no one else there to put in their spots.
Now, I know that you said, particularly last week, you know, that you had a tough weekend. You were surprised the underdogs did so well, but you weren't able to pick out the right ones. Are you finding that it's making it harder to not have, you know, those big separations between teams this year?
Yeah, I would say that. And one thing you got to be very wary of taking, backing your popular underdog. I mean, there was two last week. Texas A&M received the majority of the bets from the public. Arkansas received a majority of the bets. I mean, that's why you do have to follow the markets. Look, I'm always going to be probably an underdog guy first, but you also got to understand who is betting that underdog and be very wary of backing the popular public dog because that's usually fade material. Yeah, I mean, It's tough. I mean, I don't want to continue, completely throw out any favorite, just blindly back dogs. I mean, the favorites are going to, I'm expecting it very soon. I mean, you just can't have the underdogs cashing 65% every single week. I mean, there's going to be some regression towards the mean coming up. It might even happen this week. So I'm blindly not going to just, toss out every single favorite out there just because, I'm an underdog guy. I still think there's some value to be had there. But yeah, it's tough every week when you continue to see, and not only are you seeing, I think there were 16 outright upsets last week, including 4 by 17 points or more. So, I mean, not only are they covering the spread, I mean, they are easily covering the spread, at least in the current last 3-4 weeks.
One of the things I like to do here with you is I kind of like to cherry pick some games that the lines sort of stand out to me for a variety of different reasons, and just kind of throw them off of you and see what kind of analysis you have on these games. And there's one on Friday night between Navy and South Florida. Navy, of course, wins over Houston, nice win against Memphis in a game that you and I discussed a little bit there last week. They're an 8-point dog against South Florida here on Friday night. And that's a line that really stands out to me.
Yeah, it's probably a couple points too high. I mean, I was on Navy, and we gave it out right on this very show last week. I mean, they were a dog, shouldn't have been a dog to Memphis. Couldn't believe they were a dog, and saw that one turn out. They win the game by 2 touchdowns outright, and really, controlled matters after Memphis had a 100-yard kick return touchdown to make it 14-7 early on in that game. South Florida coming off an outright upset loss at Temple. Look, I think South Florida's lines have been inflated almost all season long. I mean, they are 5-3 against the number, but I haven't had a lot of South Florida tickets. I thought that the line, obviously, against their Florida State game was ridiculously short. Obviously, they were laying a hefty, a touchdown on the road against a very good, at least against the spread Temple team that I believe is now 7-1 against the number. Yeah, laying more than a touchdown. Quentin Flowers got banged up, and now he's going to play here for South Florida, but he got banged up at the end of the game. Yeah, I think the number should be 6. I'm leaning Navy plus the points.
What do you think the reason is behind that line? I mean, like you said, South Florida lines have been inflated a little bit here, throughout the season. But, I mean, Navy's played very, very well here over the last couple of weeks, knocking off two good teams. Is it the fact that Navy's kind of struggled on the road, which, I mean, it's an option offense, so it probably really shouldn't matter.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, actually, Navy's arguably one of the strongest. When you say struggle on the road, well, they don't in the underdog role. Navy's one of the best away dog teams, at least coming into the season. They were, the last 10 years, 24-9 as an away dog. Now, Air Force got them pretty good a couple weeks back, but yeah, I don't understand. I think it's more on the South Florida side of things. Look, Navy's been a little disrespected. I mean, they were obviously coming into the season when they only have returned one starter on offense. I mean, everyone, even myself, had them power rated way down from last year's team. But South Florida, I have found, at least power ratings aspect, a lot of the other major handicappers and services and guys that make the Vegas ratings have had South Florida, prior to last week, borderline top 25 team. And I've been way lower on them than most. I have found that my South Florida lines have been off as far as my power ratings go, 2-3 points at almost every single game all season. It's just a team that the markets have liked a lot more. And they've liked them because I think they were on a 10-1 run against the number and they were easily covering spreads. And you're probably, well, let's take it back to last year, you're probably getting value from a team when they're, a dog to like a Cincinnati team and they're up 51-3 at halftime at the end of last year. I mean, South Florida at the end of last year was winning and covering spreads by 3-4 touchdowns. And just like Georgia Tech last year, where you caught value almost an entire season from the fact that they were so dominant at the end of their past season. There's value to be had, I think, going against South Florida and remains this week against Navy.
Let's move to Saturday here. Early kickoff in Stillwater, which is a very interesting angle to this game anyway, with an 11 o'clock local time kickoff. But West Virginia getting pretty much all the love here this week. This number opened 2.5 offshore, up to 4.5 now, opened 1 out in Vegas, with West Virginia getting pretty much a steady stream of one-sided action here. And to me, it's difficult because I look at West Virginia's body of work, and to an extent, it's impressive, but only their second true road game. And they haven't really beaten anybody that's all that great in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I went against West Virginia last week. I got my teeth kicked in. So I'm probably a little leery than most, but, you know, if it's my money, my pocketbook, I'm not afraid to go against them in this spot. I mean, they're getting all the love in the world, and deservedly so. I mean, they've been dominant the last 2 weeks against Texas Tech and TCU. But, you know, Oklahoma State was sitting idle last week, and now they find that just because of the last 2 weeks, I bet 2 weeks ago this line is Oklahoma State 3-4, just because of a couple games for West Virginia. You look at it, I mean, Oklahoma State in the last 3 weeks have had a bye in Kansas. So, I mean, it's not like they've really extended a lot of effort. Meanwhile, West Virginia's had a couple of big efforts and big games. Yeah, I would say right now the line value with Oklahoma State, I got the game West Virginia won, which was the opening number. I get why a lot of people are betting West Virginia. But and I'm sure some of that sharp action for it to be early in the week, but I'll play against it. I'll take Oklahoma State plus the 4, although I'm not sure I'm going to give it out for my customers. They weren't too happy with my TCU pick last week getting beat 34-10.
I was going to say, that's a real nice slap in the face at Kansas to say that Oklahoma State was idle last week since their bye was the week previous. But, I mean, to an extent, look, let's be honest, it is Kansas. And, I mean, while Kansas is getting a little bit better, they're really not on an FBS level at this point. So I do agree with you. In a roundabout way, that it was kind of a bye week a little bit there for Oklahoma State against Kansas. But at what point do you start to see the buyback? I mean, it's a 4.5-point spread now. Some of the early players out in Vegas have a shot at a middle there with 3 and 4 at this point, if there are any 4.5s out in Vegas, and I don't see any right now on the board just yet. But it does seem like it is trending that way. So do you think we start to see some buyback? Is this a number that closes 3.5 or 4, or does it keep going up?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be stunned if it kept going up, but I think at least from the markets and how they perceive at least West Virginia, I think we're set in the 4-4.5 range. After some initial line move in the TCU game last week, we didn't see too much late in the week. It hovered, even though it was getting close to 7, it was 6, 6.5, and never really fully went to the 7. I think that's going to be the case here where it's going to sit around 4, 4.5. I don't expect too much buyback from Oklahoma State. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little leery of Oklahoma State. I know that I mentioned bye week against Kansas last week, but, you know, deep diving into that game, that they only outgained Kansas by about 20 yards in that one. Kansas had 3 critical turnovers in that game. That could have been a 7 to 10 point game. So not particularly thrilled with Oklahoma State. I think the sharps are all over that in that regard, but I can't see it going to 6. I mean, obviously 5 is a dead number. It doesn't take much to blow right through that, but what if it goes to 6? You know, I will have an Oklahoma State ticket. I mean, this was an Oklahoma State team last year, was a 7-point road underdog at West Virginia, won the game outright. In fact, I remember it clearly. It was in overtime. I had an Oklahoma State ticket. It was one of my top plays of the week. And now, after beating West Virginia last year on the road outright, now they find themselves a home dog by more than a field goal. Yeah, I mean, if it goes to 6, I mean, I will have Oklahoma State on my card this week.
One more game I want to touch on here, and then we'll get into the pick 6 segment. And this one, I don't know if you're going to have a ticket on this game. I think there's certainly a possibility that you might, but I really want to look at this more from a philosophy angle, and that's Northwestern and Ohio State. Ohio State opened 23.5 offshore, pushed right on through the 24. It's sitting around 27 now at several shops. In Vegas, open 23, sitting in that dead zone around 25. The common thought here, I guess I would say, is that people are expecting a bounce back from Ohio State. Is that a theory that you subscribe to?
Well, no. You know what? I'm not sure, because now we've seen 3 straight weeks where Ohio State has not been overly impressive. I'll take it back to the Indiana game. That was, you know, a game that obviously they ended up winning by 3 touchdowns, but the markets expected them to win by 4 touchdowns. And keep in mind, Ohio State was scoring last in that one. Then I mean, they're very fortunate to beat Wisconsin. Now, last week, they should have beaten Penn State. But were they ever covering that game? Not really. I mean, they were favored by, you know, 19 points in a lot of the early markets. I think it came down to 17.5 on game day. But, I mean, was there when you're favored by 17.5 and you're scoring 21 points, It wasn't like it was a fluke. It was obviously kind of a fluky way, though, the way Penn State won outright, but it wasn't fluky that Penn State was the right side getting the cover. I don't get it, because, I mean, Northwestern, obviously, since the first three games of the season, has really righted the ship. I mean, they covered over an Indiana team that a lot of the sharper people like, at least particularly the last 3 weeks. They covered that one, went on the road to East Lansing. Now, I'm not saying that's anything we've seen how bad Michigan State's been, but they easily won that one. They won outright at Iowa. I mean, they haven't won over great competition, but, man, to be a 26-point dog here, I mean, let's just put it in perspective. Last time Ohio State was at home, they were laying about 28, 29 to Indiana. Didn't cover the spread. Now they're playing Northwestern, a team that just beat Indiana by 10. Now you're expecting them to lay 26 and cover. Now I'm leaning Northwestern. I mean, I know everyone's expecting buyback, and it's scary going against Urban Meyer off a loss, but look, it wasn't just one performance. Last 3 weeks, Ohio State hasn't looked as good as what they did at the start of the season. And boy, with Northwestern defensively, and it can shorten the game up, I'm going to lean Northwestern plus 26.
And it's sort of, I mean, you can almost draw a parallel between Ohio State and Clemson here. I mean, Clemson's taking on a premier opponent. This is the game that they've had circled all season long. But they went to overtime against North Carolina State last week, and people are still going back to the Clemson well here, where this number's gone from 3 up to 4.5 or 5 at some places. And it's sort of the same thing where people, even sharp players, sort of fall into this trap sometimes, I think, where everyone just expects these teams to flip the switch and all of a sudden, you know, get back to being that elite team that they're supposed to be. And if you look at the movement in Vegas, this number opened 2, it's now 4.5. I mean, that's a significant move early in the week. And again, it just sort of speaks to that whole, you know, well, they're going to be who we thought they are type of thing.
Yeah, and I don't know. Again, I actually agree with the bookmakers. Another line here where I agreed with the opening number. Clemson 2, that was pretty much right around where my number was. Look, early guys in the week, the early markets. I mean, that's what I define as the sharper guys. But, boy, you talk about flipping a switch. I guess they don't expect Florida State to flip a switch, even though, I mean, Florida State hasn't looked overly great. I mean, obviously, they got drilled by Louisville, a team that Clemson beat, and, you know, got beat at home against North Carolina. But, I mean, they do have a couple of decent wins against Ole Miss, beat Miami on the road. Boy, it's tough for me to make any team more than a field goal favorite in Tallahassee. I mean, where Florida State's been, you know, prior to the North Carolina game, they were pretty much unbeatable for the last 3-4 seasons. Again, I mean, Clemson has looked tremendously great. I mean, let's just look at the Louisville game. They look great for a first half, then look bad for the next 20 minutes, and they flip a switch. Well, yeah, I don't know if I can trust Clemson completely. That's a pretty proud Florida State team. That's 11-1 against Clemson their last 12 trips to Tallahassee. Very tough for me to make Clemson more than a field goal favorite. Disagree with the early line move. I'm going to lean with Florida State plus the 4.5.
We'll go into our pick six segment here, see if we find some of those other get right type of games, or at least the bounce back types of spots for teams. I want to start with Thursday night here for the pick six, though. Virginia Tech's 4.5-point chalk on the road at Pitt.
Yeah, I mean, I like the situation. Pittsburgh's off a bye, and I mean, look at their two losses this year. I mean, North Carolina basically on the final play of the game, that was on the road, a game that they dominated for the most part. On that final drive for North Carolina, they completed four fourth down conversions. Otherwise, Pittsburgh wins that game. Also lost by a touchdown on the road against Oklahoma State in a back-and-forth shootout game. I mean, Virginia Tech, when they've looked dominant, they've been dominant. But they're also an inconsistent team, and I can't lay 4.5. On the road on a Thursday night with a Pittsburgh team coming off a bye. I like Pittsburgh plus the 4.5. I think you got a live dog there.
Well, and I should have thrown out the disclaimer first here that during the pick six segment, I just randomly go through and pick games. There's no script to this, anything like that. So some of them may not be the strongest plays from Brad, but the whole point is just to get some more analysis on the card here and cover a wider range of games. Go to Friday night here in the Mountain West, where Air Force is a 2-touchdown favorite on the road against Fresno State. Fresno State, of course, now with an interim head coach, Tim DeReuter, relieved of his duties. That's always an intriguing spot for a team because you really don't know what you're going to get.
You don't know what you get, but I would say more often than not, you get at least a 1 week or sometimes in the case 2 weeks. You usually get a surge, particularly if they like, and this is where you do a deep dive in the local newspapers, read the players' comments, see if they really fully embrace that interim coach. We've seen FIU pull off three straight wins, at least under Ron Cooper. We saw Purdue play very hard last week for their interim coach. I don't understand it. I mean, you know, let's look at Air Force. They lay 11.5 against Wyoming, lose the game outright. Lay 14 against New Mexico, lose the game outright. Hey, 14's not good enough for you. Hey, let's lay 17 at home against Hawaii. What does Air Force do? Lose the game outright. And now you're telling me they're a touchdown favorite on the road on a short travel week. I know Fresno State has stunk, but, you know, Fresno has been covering spreads. They've covered four of their last five games. And they get a renewed sense of urgency under their interim coach. Number's way too high. I'll take Fresno State plus 14. I'm not saying I think Air Force still wins the game. I think they break their losing streak, but I think the number is about 3 points too high, in my opinion.
Fresno State going with the offensive coordinator, Eric Kisau, and I apologize if I butchered his name, but in the media here so far this week, he's been talking about effort. He wants a relentless effort is exactly what he said. You need one against that triple option attack, but if the players do buy in, you know, and again, keep reading through those media tidbits, you know, it could be a very interesting game there for the boys from Colorado Springs. We'll move over to Saturday here. Duke getting some love this week against Georgia Tech. This number down through a touchdown, sitting 6.5 out there in the market.
Yeah, even though my power rankings have Georgia Tech probably 8 in this one, I mean, Duke has done a tremendous job of stopping the option each of the last couple of years against Georgia Tech. And plus that, they've already faced the option of Army this year. You know, they struggled with the option early under Cutcliffe. He made a change of defense coordinator, and they kind of find the secret sauce there. So, I mean, I understand that the line movement there from that blowing right through a touchdown. That's sharp money. I actually gave out Duke getting more than a touchdown on my Sunday Night Owl update for my VIP customers. At the current 6.5 number, though, I'm not thrilled with it. I liked anything above a touchdown. I'll still lean with Duke plus 6.5, but I think there's been some clear value lost there. Keep in mind both teams coming off a bye in that one.
And again, that's the importance of getting in early there and getting ahead of those key numbers. Do the Miami Hurricanes deserve to be road chalk in South Bend?
I think the game should be pick 'em. I'll probably pick Miami to win the game outright. But again, I don't understand. You know, look, Notre Dame's been abysmal, and I can't emphasize enough how bad they've been. 2-5 against a schedule that hasn't even featured a legitimate top 30 opponent. But on the flip side, I mean, Miami last week, you watch that Thursday night game. I mean, boy, that's now three straight losses. And I think what happened was, you know, they let the Florida State loss probably pile up into a couple more losses than when it shouldn't have been, at least the North Carolina game. A renewed sense of urgency here. You'd hope for both teams. Notre Dame's off a bye. Miami's had a couple extra days to prep. It'll look good on the field because Miami's been wearing their classic 80s uniforms, and it'll be nice to see the two teams play. But obviously level performance is a far cry from their matchups in the late 80s and early 90s. I'll lean Notre Dame plus 2.5, call Miami to win at 31-30. We'll use the exact score of the 1988 Catholics versus Convicts game, but with the other team winning.
Love it. That's a fantastic reference to drop there. This game is going to have a ton of points, or at least it probably should. Texas Tech and TCU. TCU, 8.5-point favorite here, depending on where you look. The Horned Frogs have really fallen off defensively here under Gary Patterson the last couple of years.
It's atrocious, and they're atrocious against the number, and they're not 1-6 against the spread. I mean, I had a TCU ticket last week, and I had no shot in that one. Texas Tech's a team, I mean, they get crushed by West Virginia, and then I mean, I'm not a big fan. I'll just be perfectly honest with you. I'm not a big fan of, you know, in regulation, a team, you know, has 834 yards of offense and gives up 834 yards of offense. So, and I have found that, you know, my handicapping, that doesn't work well with games a lot of times when the total's above like 80-some points, because you can just get different variations like you wouldn't believe. You can have one team like California up 17, and you think you got a cash ticket, and basically what ended up being a pick'em game, and lo and behold, you get a game that goes to multiple overtime. So I think the number at 8, 8.5 is probably about right. But the fact that TCU's been such garbage this entire year against the spread, at 8.5, it's looking like it's climbing to 9 in a couple of casinos. I guess I'll lean Texas Tech, but I'll be perfectly honest with you, that will not be on my card this week, and that one's probably already thrown out the window as far as value goes.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. How about this one? Southern Methodist, SMU, takes on Tulane. Tulane, 2.5-point favorites here in this spot. This number has grown since it opened. SMU, that's one of the biggest upsets I can remember in a while with what they did to Houston last week.
No doubt. I wanted to play against them. Power ratings-wise, SMU's probably won, but I'll tell you, this is a sharp line here, I thought. You know, even though a lot of the power ratings call SMU the better team, probably should be favored. I mean, you got Tulane laying 2.5, and that's a Tulane team coming off a 50-27 loss last week. I think it's a pretty sharp number, to be honest with you. What I don't think is too sharp is the total 51. I had a top play of the week on the over in the Tulane-Tulsa game last week that easily cashed. 51, I mean, SMU can throw the football up and down the field. They defensively, they're not used to playing the option. 51 is just a too low of a number. I mean, I forget the side. I'll take the over in that one.
All right, fair enough. That works for me. We'll spend a couple of minutes here on the NFL just to sort of look over it,
Hold on. Well,
right,
it sounded like you were so disappointed I threw out a total, which could end up being one of my top totals of the week. The total's not good enough for you?
No, the total's plenty good enough. I apologize.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know. I'm giving you a hard time there.
No, it's all right. I mean, hey, anytime you want to take an over in a game with an option team, I'm always intrigued. So I guess you'd go ahead and call that your exclusive free pick then for our segment today.
Let's do it for the free pick. We'll take SMU Tulane over 51. I appreciate that.
All right. There you go. That works for me. No, I just want to – I don't know. I mean, we get into such a groove with college football. It almost seems like going over to the NFL is a little bit of a downer. But, you know, it's a market that needs to be mentioned. There's a lot of things that are going on. Is there anything that stood out to you here in terms of looking over the Week 8 numbers?
Looking at Week 8, I mean, I probably had my best NFL week of the season. I mean, we talked about it for weeks. You know, I didn't have a couple good weeks there, but I, you know, just stayed true to form as far as consistency. Got to believe in your handicapping philosophy. Since then, I've had 3 straight winning weeks, and it's just gotten better each and every week. The situations, everything. I mean, Denver was in a great situation last night. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's easier just to keep it simple. Don't overthink things. I mean, Denver had an axe to grind, easily won and cover the spread. I'm usually not a guy that likes to lay over a touchdown in the NFL, but I thought that was a great situation. Wasn't particularly surprised. I even had a couple of live dogs. San Diego was obviously one that won outright. That was on the card. Indianapolis was on the card. I mean, and basically Indianapolis was a team that had no business losing the week prior to Houston. Very misleading game. I thought we were catching value. And look, I mean, a team that's dominated the division, and you expect them to be, you know, more than a field goal underdog against a team that's been terrible against the spread, not only at home, but just overall in Tennessee. But I thought I wasn't stunned really by anything that happened. It usually doesn't happen that way in the NFL. Usually there's 3 or 4 games that really stun you. But I thought last week it was very predictable for the most part. And I guess my picks went according to plan because the top ones went 4-0.
One game I want to touch on quickly here where the line is pretty intriguing to me. That's Seattle on the road at New Orleans. 2.5 or 3, you're paying extra juice to take the 3 on the home team there in the Superdome with New Orleans. You know, with Seattle, I mean, they're coming off of a 6-6 tie in one of the ugliest games we've ever seen, and it was a primetime game. Is this a spot where Seattle's a little bit undervalued, or do you think that this is a pretty true line here?
I would have liked to get into them 2.5 to see a lot of 3 even monies out there. Yeah, I would lean with Seattle on that one. I mean, look, you got 2 very contrasting styles here. Obviously, Seattle's all defense. New Orleans doesn't. Usually in those roles, they're going to favor with the defensive team. But, I mean, it is Drew Brees at home. I know outside the Atlanta game, I mean, he's been down. He's been – obviously, you haven't seen too much of a regression, at least this year with him so far, but – yeah, I would say coming off of that ugly performance, I expect Russell Wilson to have a bounce-back effort there. The 48, that's already telling you that they're expecting a little bit of a bounce-back effort. I mean, 48 in the Seattle games after seeing 6-6 in overtime. I would say even at 3, I'm going to lean with Seattle. Obviously, if you want to get in that game, you probably want to get in early because there might be a 2.5 or 2 out there right now. Obviously, if you don't want to lay any juice, -3 even is a little bit attractive.
Well, Well, a lot of good insights here today from Brad Powers, even though he wants to throw out top plays on totals here on the segment. But what's going on over there at bradpowersports.com?
Well, I appreciate it. Over at bradpowersports.com, where we do like totals over here at bradpowersports.com because it's a softer market. This week, you can pick up this week's issue that's due out Wednesday, tomorrow, for $10. You can pick it up. We'll have write-ups on every single college game, write-ups on every single NFL game. NFL picks last week went 3-0. If you like what you see in the newsletter, $10 for the week. It's $79 for the rest of the season. Covers you all the way through Super Bowl 51. Lifetime, the last 2 years we've been doing this. This year it's 57%. Last year was a little bit above 58%. Combine the two, 58% winners. That's on every single pick. I'm not picking totals, not picking just college sides, not just choosing NFL plays to report there. That is every single play that has been in that newsletter the last 2 years, 58%. That's not too shabby. $10 for the week, $79 for the season. BradPowerSports.com, home of the college football totals.
That Brad Powers is the number 7 on Twitter. Brad, appreciate your time, man, as always. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, look forward to it. Enjoy the game tonight, buddy. I'll be rooting for you.
Thanks, man. I'll try and enjoy it as much as I can. I'm going to be dying with every pitch, though, so I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy it. But good segment there with Brad Powers, bradpowersports.com. If you want to play any of the picks suggested by our handicappers or the writers that we have here on the show, head on over to DSI Sportsbook. Use the promo code BTB Radio. It'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus once you make that first deposit, and of course, based on the amount of that initial deposit. So I know we talk a ton of NFL here on the show. Want to give the NBA a little bit of airtime here today as the season tips off tonight. We'll bring in Austin Peters from the Step Back. Austin, how's it going, man?
I'm doing really well, Adam. How's things in Cleveland? You excited for tonight?
Oh, of course. It's hard to focus, man. There's just so much going on here in the city. It's a really, really exciting time of year, to be sure. Before we get into any NBA analysis, I know that we've got a ton of stuff to cover here. I want to talk about some teams that could be good or could be bad coming into the season. Why don't you tell us about that reshuffling that's going on? As I mentioned, you're from the Step Back, which pretty much used to be Hardwood Paroxysm.
Yeah, they just decided to kind of split it up a little bit. And so the fan-sided network decided to create a new website called The Step Back. And so a bunch of people just kind of migrated on over there. And so that's where a lot of the work is going to be done. Same writers, same people doing the same type of stuff, just a different name and a different look. And I think that it's really, really exciting.
Now, and you've done a lot of great work with Upside and Motor, particularly your scouting reports on draft-eligible players. So Upside and Motor has just become part of the Step Back as well?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Me personally, I'm not going to be doing a lot this season, kind of got a busy schedule on my plate. But, yeah, that's the plan, that everything's just going to kind of morph over there, and they're going to kind of make it one big site. I don't know if eventually that – they'll branch off and do little individual sites like they did. But I think that it's a good and welcome change, and the site looks great. And I'm really excited to read all the good stuff.
Well, we'll get Austin back on the line here. Seems to have dropped the call. But we had a lot of writers from Hardwood Paroxysm on the show last year, and they wound up being really, really tremendous assets here for us. And, it's great to get the handicapping perspectives, and obviously, they understand the betting markets, they understand the values in the lines, but also it can be good from time to time to get perspectives from people that are covering these sports and covering these teams. And, maybe it's a little bit of like that conference specialization type of thing that we were talking about, but, there's a lot of value in getting a lot of different perspectives here, and particularly Austin's, because Austin, I mentioned at the top of the show here, I was exceptionally impressed with the writing that you did last year. You had some good analysis on the show here as well. And, if you do want it in the NBA, I think that you've got a bright future if you do end up wanting to go the front office route.
I really appreciate that. I'm glad I got some people out there that believe in me. Thank you very much. That is very kind of you.
No problem. And, one of the things that I want to mention here, speaking of belief in people and things, is belief in some of these teams here heading into the season. And, it's always interesting to watch early season sports, regardless of the league, because a lot of people have preconceived notions. They expect Team X to be really good. They expect Team Y to be really bad. Maybe it doesn't work that way at the outset. But I want to focus here on the teams that you think are going to be pretty good coming out of the gate. Most of them aren't surprises. The Cavs, the Warriors, the Thunder, the Clippers, the Raptors, the Spurs. They're really good teams, but there were a couple that stood out to me. One of them being the Portland Trail Blazers, a team that, you know, I kind of thought might regress a little bit here this season. I think some other people thought that as well, but what do you like about them coming into the year?
I really like them because if you look at the West, there are some teams that either have question marks or teams that regressed. I think of a team like Oklahoma City, who obviously losing Kevin Durant means that they aren't going to be as good as last year. But you have a team with the Blazers who brought back pretty much the same team, and it's a team full of younger guys. The Blazers have always bet big on continuity, and it worked for them a few years ago when, you know, over the course of a few years, they just kept bringing back the same guys in Matthews, Batum, Aldridge, and, you know, at the end, they, you know, right before they blew it up a little bit, they were a really good team who was at the top of the West, and, you know, this team won a lot of games last year, and they're bringing back the same team. A lot of other teams aren't bringing back the same team and have gotten worse, and so I'm, you know, kind of betting with them. You know, they bet big on their continuity, spent a lot of money to keep the same team together. And while we can argue about whether that was a good idea to do that or not, I know a lot of people don't think that they spent their money wisely, but just because they didn't spend their money the way that we might not have wanted them to spend it doesn't mean that they're going to be a bad team. So I think that bringing back that same team and having the continuity and having younger guys, that just all those signs to me point to a team that's going to be just as good, if not a little bit better than last year.
Well, and a team that you think has too high of expectations from people, whether it's, you know, writers, mainstream media, whatever the case may be, is the Utah Jazz. And it just so happens that those two teams face off here tonight, Portland a 5.5-point favorite in this spot. What is it about the Jazz that you're a little bit down on here heading into the season?
I'm really, really, really excited about the Jazz this season, just like everybody else. But I think with their injuries right now to start the year, they're going to struggle. So you got guys like Favors, Hayward, Burks. They always seem to have one or two guys that are banged up. And I think that there is no doubt that when they are fully healthy and have their full team together, they are going to be one of the better teams in the Western Conference and, you know, be up there in that 4 or 5 range in the West. But that, right, you know, right out the gate, I mean, it's going to be really tough not having your best player and, you know, probably your third or fourth best player and then a key rotation piece. I mean, they're not going to be 100% to start the year, and they probably won't be 100% the first couple months.
So is that a situation where, you know, we just talked about Portland and their continuity and those guys have all played together. Do you feel like teams like that are going to be really difficult for Utah here over the first, you know, 3-4 weeks of the season?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Utah is also in that same boat with, you know, teams like Orlando or Washington or all, you know, some of these other teams that people are excited about, but they really are going to have to figure out, you know, who they are and really get used to playing with each other the first few weeks, maybe month or so. Utah is definitely in that boat, and it's going to kind of be hard to figure out who you are and, you know, kind of integrate the new guys while you also have some of your main core pieces that are hurt and aren't 100% yet.
Another team that you think could be pretty good out of the gate here, and expectations are pretty low for this team because they were very bad last year during the Kobe Bryant retirement tour, that's the Los Angeles Lakers. I imagine some of our listeners out there were kind of surprised to only see the Lakers open a 5-point underdog against Houston tomorrow night, number up to 6, but what is it about the Lakers that you like? Is it not having that Kobe Bryant distraction anymore? Is it the hiring of Luke Walton? What do you think it is?
A little bit of both, but actually probably mainly the hiring of Coach Walton. I think after watching them in the preseason and just seeing what type of team they're going to be and how they're going to play, I think that the Lakers should be excited about their future and who they have with D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram and even Julius Randle. I think, you know, if Julius Randle can be sort of like a 60-70% type player that, you know, Luke had with Draymond in Golden State, a guy who can catch on the short roll and make a play, you know, either pass to the open guy or, you know, go and finish at the rim. I mean, he's not the shooter nor is he the defensive player that Draymond is. But I think that if you could, like I said, if you can get 60 or 70% of that at that spot, that they can be they can be pretty decent. And I think D'Angelo Russell has a really bright future. He's just looked absolutely incredible in summer league and in the preseason. He's just doing a lot of things that Lakers fans should get excited about. And I think that they're going to surprise some people. It might not be a team that, you know, wins 40 games and sneaks into the playoffs, but it's going to be a team that I think is going to win some games that are, you know, people aren't expecting them to win, and they're going to sneak up on some teams. And this will be the year where, you know, after a couple of years of toiling at the bottom, I think the Lakers are going to show real progress this year.
Well, and I think that that's a real positive thing for a lot of people in the handicapping community, because when you look at the Lakers, you talk about teams going out there and playing, you know, three games in four nights against the Lakers, the Clippers, and Golden State, or, you know, maybe they stop in Denver or Utah on the way out there. Maybe they have to play, you know, Phoenix or Portland or Sacramento, somebody like that. So the Lakers, in a situational betting sense, could be a really profitable team here for our listeners. Is there a particular opponent that they'll match up really well with here early on in the year?
Well, I'll tell you what, that first game against Houston, neither of those teams will play a possession of defense. So you can expect that to be a high scoring game. You know, I haven't really looked at their schedule to see who they play, but they are going to be able to score a lot of points, and they are going to be able to put pressure on some defenses. And so unless they're going up against the team with like a top five defense, like a Golden State or San Antonio or Cleveland or Oklahoma City, Orlando is going to have a really good defense this year. Like teams like that, I would expect them to have trouble, and then they're just going to bleed points defensively. But if they're going up against a team that, you know, has a pretty mediocre defense or bad defense like Houston, like I would expect the game to be close and pretty high scoring.
Well, a team that got a lot of love here in the preseason, and actually for a while out in Las Vegas, the team that was getting the most futures money to win the NBA title was the New York Knicks. And obviously, you know, a lot of people aren't thinking the Knicks are going to win the title necessarily, but just expecting this to be a team that can make the playoffs, win a series or two, give you an opportunity to make some profit out of that. Now, they draw a tough assignment on opening night on Tuesday night against Cleveland, but then they get Memphis, Detroit, Houston, Chicago, Utah, Brooklyn. So some manageable teams there, but you think people need to pump the brakes a little bit here with the Knicks?
Yeah, the problem with New York is, first off, I don't know who on their team is going to be able to guard anybody except for, I mean, Kristaps is pretty good, but outside of him, they don't have anybody that I really trust to get a stop and do their job on defense. But, you know, I'm not a fan of the whole not enough balls on the court thing that people will sometimes throw out there, especially with Golden State. I don't really like that analogy, but when you have a bunch of players, when the only thing that they do well is something that requires having the ball in their hands, I think that that can be a problem. And so you look at guys like Derrick Rose, Noah, Melo, Brandon Jennings, you know, the guys like that, like if you take the ball out of their hands, I mean, Melo's different because he can really shoot it, but you know, he's the best player, so he's going to have the ball a lot. But when you take the ball out of Noah's hands, when you take the ball out of Rose's hands, when you take the ball out of Brandon Jennings or some of these other guys, like what do they bring to the team and what do they do? And the answer is they don't bring a whole lot. And so I'm very skeptical that this is a team that is going to be, you know, a super team like Derrick Rose says they are. And I honestly, they're not a team that I'm expecting to make the playoffs this year. But, I mean, I hope I'm wrong because, you know, they have some exciting names. And obviously, it's exciting when the Knicks and teams like the Knicks and Lakers are good. But I'm very skeptical that it'll work out.
What do you think about the Jeff Hornacek hire? I mean, is that something that's going to work out for them?
I think he got a bad rap in Phoenix, and I think that he wasn't given a fair shot there. They obviously had some interesting situations and things that kind of didn't go their way with guys getting hurt, guys being, you know, bad personalities in the locker room. And so I don't think he got a fair shot in Phoenix. I don't know if it'll work out in New York just with their personnel. And, you know, if you look at the style they played in Phoenix, they really don't have that type of style with the team that, you know, and all the money and resources they spent on the guys this offseason. So I don't know if it'll look good this year, maybe next year when Rose comes off the books and hopefully they can get a better point guard in there to run the offense. And who knows what's going to happen with, you know, the front office next year. There's been a lot of stuff written out there and rumors swirling about front office change. And so, you know, you never know. I think that, you know, there's only 30 head coaching jobs in the league. And so obviously this is, and it's New York. So who wouldn't want to coach in the bright lights and be on the biggest stage? But I don't know. I kind of, am, you know, like I said, I'm skeptical that things are going to work out, and I'm, you know, I don't know if this will be a fair year to judge whether or not Coach Hornacek is a good coach. You know, same thing with the situation in Phoenix. I just think that it's kind of hard to judge whether or not he's, you know, even like a competent coach, to be honest with you.
Another team that got a new coach here, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they get Tom Thibodeau. And when I was looking at season win totals here and doing some preview stuff over at bangthebook.com, the Timberwolves had one of the biggest leaps from the actual number of games that they won last year to their season win total this year. So people obviously expecting a lot from Minnesota. And look, why wouldn't you? I mean, this is a team loaded with young talent. Seems like now they have the coach to put all the pieces together. But again, another team that you're kind of taking a little bit of a wait and see approach with, correct?
Yeah, I'm really excited for the Timberwolves. I think that maybe not this year, but the next year, if this was the hype that they were getting, you know, in 2 years, I would be all in and buy into it. But they're still just a really, really young team. And, you know, while they do have the pieces and the coaching now to be an elite defensive team, I just don't know outside of, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns and Brandon Rush, I don't know who brings any above average shooting to their team. And that's going to really, really, you know, hurt the spacing when you have guys like Wiggins and Rubio who are going to want to have the ball a lot and want to do some things, and they're not going to have any room to create. So it's going to be hard for them to get points. But I mean, it is a really exciting, fun team to watch. And it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up being, you know, a 40-win team and delivered on all the potential and promise that everybody's talking about. But I just, you know, I always like to take the conservative approach to things, you know, with them having a 21-year-old point guard, with them having, you know, a 20-year-old as their franchise building block, another 21-year-old who's going to be having a lot of the usage on their team. It's, you know, and then their rotation pieces are young guys like Gorgui Jang and Shabazz Muhammad. Those are, you know, guys who are fairly young in their careers in the league so far. And so I'm kind of skeptical that they will be as good as people think they're going to be this season, but there definitely is a lot to like moving forward. And they are probably a team that will improve throughout the course of the year. And they have, you know, anytime you can add a top five coach in the league to your team over the off season, that's another big plus as well.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that you mentioned some teams that people really like and have high expectations for, and you think that they need to simmer down a little bit. A lot of them have new head coaches. Minnesota, New York, Indiana has a new head coach, Washington as well, Memphis with another new head coach. A lot of coaching movement here in the NBA this offseason. And I want to focus on Indiana here for a second, and then we'll get to a team that you really don't have high expectations for at all that kind of surprised me a little bit. But the Pacers go from Frank Vogel and Nate McMillan. This is going to be a very dramatic change for them.
Yeah, and, you know, Coach Vogel, I know we've talked before that I'm really high on Coach Vogel, and I think that he's a great coach. And, you know, who knows what Nate McMillan's going to be with this team. It's just kind of an unknown at this point. I'm not going to judge one way or the other. But when you go from Coach Vogel, you know, to something that's unknown, plus the roster turnover that they had this offseason, I think that they will be a playoff team, and I think that they might even be a home court advantage playoff team if the pieces fit well together. But it's going to take some time for all of that to develop, for Coach McMillan to see what he has and how he's going to coach this team and what kind of stuff they're going to do. And then also for their lineups and their rotations to figure themselves out. And so that'll take a little bit. But I mean, they definitely have the talent and, you know, the pieces that if they fit well together, they can really cause some problems in the East.
Indiana up from a 5-point favorite to a 6.5-point favorite for Wednesday night's game against Dallas. Do you think that that's based more on the fact that Indiana is going to play it a little bit quicker of a pace, so there's going to be more chances for them to score the basketball? Or do you feel like that is, you know, kind of a byproduct of this hype train of, you know, bringing in Jeff Teague and some of the other moves that they made over the summer?
Yeah, I think it's both. And there is a situation and a scenario where you can see this working out, right? If Miles Turner, you know, when he gets 100% healthy, when he plays the five, he spaces the floor and he does some other things. And then you have Thad Young, who, you know, is a stretchy kind of power forward. You can't really stretch it out to three, but to 18 and 20 feet. You have Paul George, who's a top 10 player in the league. You have other guys like Glenn Robinson, who's going to be playing a lot apparently. And then you got CJ Miles and Jeff Teague, really good at getting in the lane and, you know, kicking it out and finding guys. So you can see a situation where if they play that up-tempo style and those pieces, they can fit and they can play well. You know, it's just going to kind of take a little time for that to work out. And, you know, with Turner, you know, who knows whether he's going to be healthy all the time or not. You know, it's going to, you know, like I said, there's going to be some growing pains at the beginning, but at the end, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they were towards the top in the East.
I guess one other team that I'll mention here, and I actually overlooked them a little bit because they don't play tomorrow night, that's Washington with Scott Brooks. So Scott Brooks gets back into the coaching game here after losing his job with Oklahoma City prior to the 2015-16 season. He's got a building block in John Wall. Is there enough there aside from John Wall for Scott Brooks to have a good season with this team?
Yeah, just a lot of question marks on that team, right? Who's going to start at center? Well, now it's going to be Gortat since Mahimi had surgery, but, you know, Gortat isn't a guy who's going to move the needle for you. He's a solid role player, but he's not a guy like Mahimi. Mahimi can move the needle for you because he really protects the rim well, and he can pass on the short roll. Like, he just does a lot of good things. And then their 4 and 3 spots are question marks too. What are you going to get out of Markieff Morris? Is he going to be consistent enough to be a guy who gives you, you know, consistent numbers on a night-to-night basis? What is Otto Porter's role in the NBA? You know, what are they going to get from the Satoransky kid who, you know, might be a decent player and could fit into the rotation, but, you know, and then is Beal and Wall, are they going to be healthy all the time? You know, neither of them have had a fully healthy season recently. And John Wall just had a couple surgeries in the off season too. So is he going to be his 100% self? You know, just there's a lot of questions. And with a first year head coach, it's kind of like the situation in Indiana, but I'm not as high on that situation because they're question marks that they've had previously that I don't know the answer to, and I don't know if it's going to work out. I don't know if the pieces fit, you know, with having multiple non-shooters on the floor and multiple guys on the floor who are going to expect to get a high amount of usage. So, I mean, John Wall's a great player, but, you know, is he healthy? And, you know, is he a good enough player to where if he's the best player on your team, you are a playoff team? I don't know if we've seen that consistently enough yet.
So the one team that you said you would feel confident going against that really stood out to me, and Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and New Orleans, you know, really don't. I mean, those are teams that are either in various phases of rebuilding. They're very young. They don't have a whole lot of depth. None of that really surprises me necessarily, but this one does. The Sacramento Kings. The Kings really aren't in a rebuilding mode. They've got a lot of established players here. And my thought process as somebody who doesn't follow the NBA as closely as you do is that, you know, Dave Yeager has to be an upgrade over George Karl. George Karl is a Hall of Fame coach, but that was obviously a toxic situation there in Sacramento. So what is it that you don't like about the Kings?
I really don't like, you know, you say that they're not really in a rebuilding mode. Well, they haven't really been in a rebuilding mode, but have been bad consistently over the last several years. And so they got to prove it to me. I'm going to be always very confident that they aren't going to be a team that challenges anybody in the West until they can prove it. They had that little stretch at the beginning of the season a couple years ago when Mike Malone was there and, you know, he really empowered Cousins and got Cousins to buy in, and then they fired him and Cousins got sick, and it's all been a train wreck since. So until, you know, they can prove to me that they are a, you know, competent, consistent team on a night-to-night basis, I feel really confident that, you know, things aren't going to work out for them necessarily, even though they did make some, you know, splashier moves in the off season and kind of, you know, I don't know. And the Rudy Gay thing is a big question mark. He's probably going to get traded, and, you know, he's kind of been very butthurt about his situation there. And so that could cause some problems in the locker room as well. So just a lot of signs pointing to them being towards the bottom of the West again this year.
Well, definitely a good introduction here to the NBA season for our listeners from Austin Peters, again, from the Step Back. Before you go, I just want you to mention you wrote a really, really strong piece over there. I want you to let our listeners know what it's about.
Yeah, I just kind of wrote about how, you know, the big man has evolved over time, and a lot of people think that a post-up big man isn't something that's worth investing in or building your team around. And I don't think that you can say that that guy isn't a guy you can build a championship team around. I think that the types of shots you get from a post-up are still the most efficient shots in basketball. And I think that with the right pieces on both offense and defense, a guy like that can win a championship. So you look at some of the younger guys in the league, like an Anthony Davis or Karl Towns, Andre Drummond, you know, some of those guys, like you, I think that there is a path and a situation there where you can see them being the best player on a championship team. You got to have the right guys and you got to have the right pieces around them. And I think that's the interesting thing about Minnesota going forward. I think that's an interesting thing that New Orleans hasn't done the best job of. They've also had some really bad injury luck too. So, I mean, that's just kind of things haven't been going so well in Anthony Davis's early part of his career. And then you got Andre Drummond. I think that they're doing a really good job of putting the right pieces around him. I'm very high on that team once Reggie Jackson gets back. So, there is a path to the big man being the best player on your team and winning a championship. We just haven't seen it done recently enough to really warrant that. And so I'm really interested to see how those teams build around those players, those younger big men, to see if that can really happen and if things can kind of swing back to where they were early 2000s and then in the 1990s.
When you can find that over at the Step Back, it's at @the_step_back on Twitter. And then Austin, APete1993. Austin, appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Anytime, Adam. Thanks.
A good introduction there to the NBA season, which, of course, does tip off tonight. Coming up on Wednesday's edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll have the Week 8 Gridiron Gambling Report segment, myself and Cole Ryan. Also, Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds. We'll look at the WGC HSBC Champions event, the third event of the 2016-17 PGA Tour season. And then we'll also chat with him about his NBA betting philosophies. As I talked about already, high volume guy across all the markets. So we'll get his thoughts on the NBA. Coming up on Thursday's show, we'll switch Brian Leonard in for Tony George. So Brian Leonard will join us on Thursday. We'll get Brian back in his regular time slot next week. Just had a scheduling conflict here for this week. Then also on Thursday, we'll go hunting for winners with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com. We'll get him back on the air here this week as well after having to do the Proud Papa thing last week, taking his kids to the doctor. So we'll be able to get him back on the show on Thursday. And then coming up on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 8. Myself and Cole Ryan coming off of a 3-2 week that should have been better. We're seeing the game is a lot better now. So the analysis is going to be coming hot and heavy here on Friday. And also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. He'll tell us where the money is in both the college football, and the NFL markets for this week. So that'll be your lineup for the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. So that'll do it for us. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. I will talk to you again tomorrow.